Hello and welcome to another installment of the Mac and Jack podcast. It's been a minute. I'm Jack.
And I'm Mac, I think, still, yeah?
Yeah, I think this thing's still holding together. So, Mac, I guess let's get into it. And what the heck's been happening the last 2 months? Why have we been so busy?
Man, I'm happy to be back, for sure. Hopefully this becomes a routine. I think let's just say we were on summer break. Let's say that.
Yeah, okay, fine.
I mean, during the summer, for most people, obviously, vacations and travel. And I think the last time we spoke, we interviewed Kyle McDougall, and I was in the middle of a 15-day road trip. I was in, like, Salt Lake City, and then I continued on, and I went up to, like, Grand Tetons, Yellowstone, and I was moving across the country, and I decided to turn a 5-day trip into like a super long trip. And then when I got here, it just continued. And when I got to Charlotte, I hung out with Zach Parks. If you guys don't know who he is, he's Zach Parks Photo on Instagram. He has a photography book coming out, Where the Buzzards Roost, I think is the name of it. Really amazing photographer. Hung out him in Spartanburg because that's really close by. And I was like, hey, man, I'm in your neck of the woods. Let's hang out. Then my mother turned 70, and I spent like 4 or 5 days in Asheville with the whole family. I wrapped that up on Sunday, flew to Arizona on a Monday. And I got freaking married, so spent a week in Arizona. Yeah, and that was cool. And I snuck away while I was there. Went up to Holbrook, Arizona on Route 66, which was an amazing town. I shot a YouTube video there. Then what else did I do after that? Came back, but I've been shooting a ton of film, man. Like, a ton.
That's good. I'm not surprised you shoot a ton of film, even on a slow day.
I just force myself to, I don't know, I feel obligated to just keep pressing the shutter. And, you know, the YouTube channel forces me to continue to shoot even when I don't feel like it. So I guess it's good, but home dev can be brutal, you know?
I didn't know you were devving everything at home. Are you using like a standard like Patterson thing? Like are you using a sous vide or anything like that for the temperature, or what's the deal?
Yeah, so everything at home, I use CineSteel Liquid C41, and I use a sous vide. I got a Target like 2 years ago. Develop everything in a 3-reel Patterson tank, hang it in my shower with tape on one end on a clothes hanger, and I tape pennies to the other end and let it hang and dry. And then I'm scanning on like a Plustek 8200i. Since I only shoot 35 millimeter, it makes it really easy. When I do shoot 120, I tried mirrorless scanning, but I'll send that off. But I try to avoid 120 for sure.
Ah, interesting. You should go to the dollar store and get some pegs. It'll save you on the tape.
I know, right? Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I develop everything you see on my feed. I developed. I mean, maybe 1% of my images I have to send off. Like that 15-day road trip, the first half of it, I did send off because I was going to be gone for so long and I needed the images for content. So I sent that off, and I don't like doing that. I like supporting labs, specifically the darkroom lab, but I don't like how contrasty their scans are. I like mine like really just obnoxiously like overexposed, and it's just my jam. It's just what I like. So I prefer to develop myself. I complain about it, but yeah, I develop everything.
I completely get you on that. I really need to get into devving color at home again. It's been far too long. Like, I'm not even devving black and white right now, which is stupid. I think I mixed up a batch of Fixer. 6 months ago, it's going to be gross. I don't trust it at all. It's just going to have to go down.
Yeah.
Go down the safe disposal route. Yeah, I am excited to get back to developing. After these last 2 months, things were pretty hectic, and now they definitely feel much more settled, and I'm actually taking pictures again, which is great. I've shot more in the last 2 months than I have in the last year, so I'm taking that as a big old thumbs up. And yeah, it's just be nice to get back out there with my Rolleiflex, which has been sat in a box for 2 years, just hanging, not doing anything.
Right.
So nice to give it a spin.
Yeah, dude, that's really great that you're shooting more, and it's really liberating too to be able to develop yourself, because you don't have to like send it off. And I'm always scared it's going to get lost in the mail, and then you have to wait. And then, I don't know, I'm just really paranoid about having, because everywhere I shoot, I travel to go shoot. So if those rolls were to get lost in the mail, I mean, that'd be devastating, because the place that I shot it at, I probably won't be back there ever. If so, a decade maybe. So I don't know. It's just part paranoia and part convenience of being able to come home and develop it that night for sure.
I completely get that. Like, I remember when I first started devving at home, the biggest win was knowing it would be done that evening. Because during university, we'd be on, I mean, relatively tight deadlines. And where most of us were living, there were no labs nearby. It meant you had to kind of tack on a trip if you were going into central London to head to one of the pre-approved labs by the university, because they didn't have their own devving facility. Black and white you could do, but color, no way. They did not allow that. So I just started doing it at home. Got a lot of flack from tutors. Like, they were not keen. They're like, you know, it's really, really important to get the temperatures right. I'm like, yes, I get that. I'm like, did you develop these yourself? I was like, yes. Oh, they look fine. I was like, yes. Where is this going? I don't get it.
Right.
I still remember doing my first C-41 and being kind of upset that it was, at least in my opinion, way easier and more straightforward than black and white. With one of those Tetinol kits. I'm sure most of them are basically the same kind of setup with the thing, the Blix and the whatever last stabilizer. I've got notes written down somewhere.
Yeah, I don't even use stabilizer. Yeah, I just use the developer.
That's rogue.
Whoa. No, I mean, all modern films, you don't really need that anymore. I do the developer, the Blix, and then I run water over it for 4 minutes, and then I use the wash, right, so it doesn't have stains. Mm-hmm. But like, it's so funny, like, people are so scared of color, but like, I'm always multitasking when I develop color, and no matter how absent-minded I am, it is always really consistent. And I just developed black and white film for the first time yesterday in probably years, and it was the most intimidating, scary thing, and I totally crap the bed on it. So I told you I got married, and we didn't have time to do a bridal shoot, and I really wanted to capture Dani how she looks now in her dress. And of course, I couldn't do the shoot before, you know, it's bad luck to see the bride in her dress, blah blah blah, whatever. So I said, okay, I'm gonna go shoot a YouTube video. I'm gonna shoot Ilford FP4, and I ordered some DDX and Ilford Fixer. I came home. And first of all of them, depending on ISO, you have to do it different times, and every film stock is a different time. It's different dilutions. It's all this it is so many different variables that are in play with black and white. And then the key to is over agitation. Like, if you over agitate it, it'll be grainy as shit. So I shot the FP4 at ISO 64, and I developed it per the instructions at ISO 125, and man, it's really, really grainy. Like, it's so hard for me to mess up C41. It is almost impossible. Like, I will run one batch of chemicals, 30 rolls, and I'll add maybe 15 seconds after I get past 20, and still everything is consistent. If you look at my feed, those are varying levels of drinking and not paying attention, and they're so consistent. Man, if you miss anything on black and white, it can cause grainy photos. The blacks are too black. It's way too contrasty. So I salvaged like 12 images. So that video will come out in a couple of weeks. But man, it was disappointing. And it felt like I was a rookie all over again. And I know people listening to this, but no, black and white is the easiest. Look, reality is relative, right? To who you are, what you're used to doing. And for me, it's not something that I'm used to doing. And of course, we live in the information age and all the information's out there. But even with that, man, black and white is so intimidating. Even getting the water to the right temperature, because here it's pretty warm and muggy. And the water coming out of the spigot was like 80 degrees. I had to put ice in there. I even used my sous-de-vie. I put it in a bucket of water, put ice in there, got it down to 75. And it went up to about 76. So I tried to adjust for that temperature. It's intimidating, man.
Yeah, I can I can agree with that. Most people who live in the UK don't have a huge issue with the temperature because in Celsius it's around 20. I think most developers are happy at. That's pretty much tap water, unless you live somewhere really cold or way out in the sticks.
Right.
Like, I always quite like the convenience of, even though the water in our London flat sucked, it was so, so hard. It came out like 20 degrees Celsius every time. Like, no need for like putting it in a jug, hot water and all that stuff. And that felt really, really swish all in all.
Black and white's difficult. It is.
Yeah, and there's just way, way too many variables. If you get used to one, like, I feel it's extra important with black and white to just stick to one film stock, one developer, try it for a bit, and if you hate it after however many rolls, then make your adjustments, because there's a good chance you're not going to have done it a way that you like the first time, which is, you know, fine. And it's intimidating all in all. But also, it's kind of exciting. You can really, really find a niche that works for you, go that angle, and you can make some really, really cool stuff. Though I must admit, although I'm saying this, having no access to a darkroom and no future plans to have access to a darkroom, because around here the options are shit, I still think like wet printing black and white is way, way nicer. Although you can get really good scans, don't get me wrong, some digital stuff is fantastic. I like wet processing. It's just so much nicer seeing prints actually made with chemistry and all that, even if they're resin prints. They're just I don't know, they just pop when they're right. They kind of leap off the page, and that's probably me getting romantic, and it's probably a whole load of hoo-ha, but it's kind of
that's a whole other skill set in itself too, Jack, you know, like that whole process as well. And talking about post with black and white is really difficult as well with a scanner, because there's no scratch removal, right? So you've got to, like, you know, spot remove all the scratches, and then, oh man, if you get any dust, it's just a nightmare. As with color film, my scanner will remove all of that. And I've already developed a preset in ViewScan. I mean, I only shoot pretty much Lomo 400 at 200. So I save my settings on one scan. And for, I don't know, 2 years, I just use that same preset. And then I export that file to Lightroom, and I just clean up the contrast and, you know, the shadows and light and highlight, stuff like that. And it's really easy, but oh my goodness, man. Post on black and white for me was a nightmare. But to your point, I think I'm just going to stick with one film stock, maybe have a secondary stock, just like I do with color. So with color, it's Lomo 400 or Pro Image 100 when I'm in the desert. But yeah, I think I'm going to go to HP5 and FP4 as my backup for portraits.
Big fan of HP5. And I'm probably waxing lyrical. I just think it's a super versatile film. I quite enjoyed pulling it and like rating it at 200. Always gave a really, really nice base, especially for scanning. Like, it's not that I dislike it at box speed. I think we were using ID11 1:1, which I think is similar to D76 1:1, though probably not. I don't know. I found scanning it even on like really nice Flexdite scanners, it just wanted to see contrast and nothing else. So if you wanted to get any kind of even tonality, nah. Maybe it's the wrong film. But shooting it at 200, pulling it back a bit, it was great. And again, to go back to the point of not sending it to a lab, sure, you can ask them, can you do this special treatment to it? But suddenly your bill gets a lot higher, and they might not do it quite the way you were wanting to. And at least if you do it and screw it up, it's on you. You don't have to have this awkward conversation of, hey, I thought I told you to. Nah, it's
right.
So much better being in control of it. Plus, you can learn what, just dial yourself in more, make adjustments, and that whole thing. All this talk of scanners, like self, like removing scratches and automations. Oh, buddy, it's making me really, really think I should, you know, maybe in future pick up something like a Jobo.
Yeah.
Just to let it turn. I don't have to think about it so much. That actually sounds really, really nice about now. Not that I'm a really busy man, but it's just a little bit better than standing by a sink, taking a swig, slosh, slosh, right. Taking a swig, slosh, slosh. And yeah like it, that excites me, the idea of automation.
Yeah, when I last shot Black and White, I was shooting HP5, and speaking of the versatility, I really love that because I could push it to 1600 even on 35mm, and it looked pretty great, you know. I mean, it can take whatever you throw at it. Mm-hmm. And then the point about sending it to a lab, if you send it to a lab, a lot of that look that they scan is baked in, and the latitude of it in post, it's hard to pull out a lot of that, you know? So like with this FP4 today, I was scanning it. I scanned one negative 4 different times trying to get it right, you know? So at least I could do that instead of waiting for my negatives to be shipped back from the lab, you know, because they deliver the digital versions in advance.
Yeah.
And if you hate it and you are on a deadline, you're screwed, because a lot of that, especially if it's too contrasty, it's almost impossible to pull that contrast out.
I can completely agree. Although I am lazy, particularly when it comes to color, I don't really have a good scanning setup. There's a flatbed I have. It's really, really old. I have not really gotten it out at all. I don't like it. It's just because it can scan 4x5. But I've trying to treat lab scans as like contacts in some ways. It just means I can get a glance at what I'm doing. If there's good shapes in it and it looks nice, it will probably be worth scanning at a later date with whatever settings or kind of vibe, tonality, etc. that I feel. So I'm still enjoying that as a work process, particularly as it means that I don't have to do anything other than just click the button, send it off, and cross my fingers that I haven't got a bad camera. Incidentally, so talking about stuff that we've been doing, I'm feeling lucky this time. Previously, I think it was 4 years ago, I went to Hawaii. I took my Leica 3, which I like that camera a lot. It's fun. It's a stupid system, but I like shooting it.
Yeah.
I did not realize that the 1/1000th of a second did not work.
Oh,
it makes a click, but the shutter doesn't open. It just sticks to itself. So I think I spent probably 6 or 7 rolls just on that camera. I'm not even kidding. I think 5 pictures came out.
Yikes.
Because, yeah, I think I took some 400 ISO stuff. It's really bright in Hawaii, and I had to have it on that shutter speed the whole time at like F11, F16.
Yeah.
And yeah, everything came out as nothing. So on the trip that I just did there, I took a camera that I think still works. There might be a small light leak, because it has been known in the past to do that. But I really hope the Rolleiflex doesn't do something similar, because
that would be devastating.
That would suck.
Yeah.
So I've got a whole bunch of Ektachrome. I think I just shot like 3 or 4 rolls of that, and there's actually a roll of Lomo 400 that I had kicking around. I haven't shot a whole bunch of 120 color really for a couple of years now. So I'm very excited to get those sent off and see what it looks like. From what I've heard, the light in Hawaii is really, really good for Ektachrome. Like, I've heard many, many people say that that's like the only place that they would shoot it. So I'm hoping that we get some nice punchy tones coming through, and there's going to be some exciting content soon, obviously.
There you go.
Exciting pictures of trees. Yeah.
Man, I'm excited to see that.
Yeah, it's going to be like personal work. I don't think I'm going to do a whole bunch with it. But damn it, I wanted to take those pictures. I screwed up last time, so got to recreate the moments.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I'm always scared about on these trips. It's like, what if the camera doesn't work, you know? And I've been testing a lot of new cameras here recently, and I'm shooting my test roll while I'm on location in some new place. And I'm like, am I going to be screwed here?
Well, it's a good thing on this trip I did take a backup, because the Rolleiflex was kind of the backup. My Olympus XA3 is technically still operable, but it's doing some dumb thing where it just it just goes off whenever it wants to. I've looked at the problem. It's something to do with because it's got an electronic shutter button. There's a magnet in it that slips, and it just says, "Oh, time to take a picture," even if it's closed. It just does that. So you'll be winding the thing on, and it'll just, you're like, "What the hell?" Except it's completely random. Like, yeah. I think the longest I had where it didn't do that, it took about 3 hours before it could tick again. Wow. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna put you in the bag, cut my losses, whatever rolls went through X-ray. Well, you know, we'll see how they go. Should be fine. But that was a good time to have a backup camera, because although I didn't want to take the TLR with me everywhere, a bit better than having nothing, because I don't really like using my phone. So
no, it just doesn't feel right.
I have high hopes. So to go back onto that point, I heard through the woodwork, you've been testing a lot of Nikon equipment.
Something
like that, a whole bunch of SLRs. Tell me more about what's going on there.
Yeah, however you say it. So I haven't shot my Leica in probably a month. I mean, so when I started photography, I mean, it was all for fun. I was shooting Nikon D3200, and then I started shooting weddings, and it was Nikon D750s for a couple of years. And then when I got into film, I only shot Nikons. And so I've been shooting my Leica, and I absolutely love the images that my Leica produces. They definitely are my favorite images by far. But, you know, I don't know. I just felt that nostalgia of the Nikon days, and I wanted to go through it again. And Nikon has so many inexpensive film cameras. And I mainly wanted to prove to my audience, because I get a lot of shit on my YouTube channel. I don't know about shooting Leica, and I don't understand. It's misplaced hate, but I mean, people probably have miserable lives, and they want to lash out at anyone for anything. But
oh no, it's totally projection.
Right, for sure.
It like, almost always is.
They don't know
not
me.
Not a psychologist, yeah. But
yeah, not at all. But they know nothing about me, but they just assume because I have a Leica, I'm X, Y, or Z, which is all totally wrong, but everyone's entitled to their opinion, regardless of how shitty it is.
So true.
So whatever. So I was like, you know what? Fuck these people. I can make the same images with a $75, $50 film body. So I bought a Nikon FG20 for $50, a Nikon FM10, which isn't even a Nikon. That's a Cosina. That actually was free because it was my now wife's camera when she was a teenager. We found it. We went to Arizona. I was like, well, shit, I'm going to shoot that. What I've been saying in the past like six videos is it's all about light, lens, and film stock. And to prove that, you don't need a Leica body. I mean, I prefer a Leica body because for focusing manually, for me, it's way easier with the rangefinder focusing patch than an SLR focusing screen. For me personally, everybody's like, whatever. But for me, for sure, that's the way it is. But so the last four trips I've been on, I've only shot Nikons. And I shoot Zeiss glass. Ooh, so snobby. But it's light lens and film stock. And I've been taking some images that I'm really proud of with those combinations. And I like being able to do that, right? And there's some very capable cameras out there. The Nikon F100, I forgot how much of a banger that camera was. 1/8,000th of a second shutter speed. Also, it's really – I only shot manual focus on that too. It has a really great focus confirmation. You put the focus point on what you want. There are arrows that tell you which way to turn the focus ring. And once you see a little green dot, your focus is perfect. And, man, I nailed focus every time with that. But it's such a beast to carry. It's a giant camera. But if you use a lens with, like, CPU contacts, you can use all the metering modes. And then all of the exposure modes, aperture, manual, all of that. So that's really cool. So I shot that on Route 66 in Holbrook. But yeah, man, Nikons too. And I'm enjoying it. Of course, I'm not going to get rid of my Leica, and I would like to pick that back up here. But I have a whole stable of Nikons that I had already just sitting in a closet, like an F3, FM3A, a couple others. And then I picked up these really cheap versions. Just because I have a lot of Nikon glass too laying around, so I was like, you know what, it would be really cool to just slap this on any camera body and go, and whatever the day calls for.
That is, I mean, it's a pretty good way of looking at it, and it's funny in a way. Don't get me wrong, I like the simplicity of things particularly when it comes to like controls on a Leica or just any other system that has fewer controls because it's less to get distracted. But it's also easy to remember that people used to go absolutely nuts for the idea of all of these features and things. And honestly, there's a lot of them that are quite good. Like I know a little bit about Matrix Meeting. I know you touched upon that in your last video, but that's pretty amazing, and it just takes a lot of the thought process out, and it just works.
Yeah.
And like these things are so versatile. But that mindset of just slapping whatever glass on and being able to make do with it. Yes, absolutely. 100%.
The F100 is really intimidating, though, because it has so much going on. And I don't like it because I'm not sure what I have set. And it has 22 program settings, which can impact a lot, too. Jeez. So I don't think I'll shoot it very much, but I'm a big fan of spot metering, and the F100 has amazing spot metering. That's why I really like my Leica M5. It has an 8mm focus spot, and the F100 has a 1mm, no, 4mm, which takes up like 1% of the viewable area. So it's really precise, and I really like spot metering. And I think that's where I got in trouble with that bridal shoot. I was shooting the FM10. It was center weighted metering, and I was really pushing the latitude of the film because I would put Danny, my wife, in really harsh light, and there was a forest behind her that was all shadows. And the center weighted metering was taking up like 75% of the frame, so it was picking up a lot of the dark, and and that FP4 just couldn't handle that range. So that's why a lot of my shots are super grainy. If I'd have been shooting my M5 or the F100, or I'd use my Siconic incident metering, I think I would have nailed it much easier. So it's just a learning experience for me. But I like having to figure that out. But yeah, the F100, I probably won't shoot very much. A, I like manual focus. B, I need as few dials on that thing as possible. And my Leica M5, it's literally just one dial on top, shutter speed. Then you got your aperture ring on the lens, and you set the ISO, and you're done. You know? So it's not a lot going on. It's hard to mess that up, comparatively speaking. Even like the FM3A, it's a little more complicated camera, but it's still very minimal.
I mean, I tell you, you want simple, you need to try out a Rolleiflex T. And the reason I mention this is because anyone who's used one will know that there are not two dials. It's a single dial for shutter speed and aperture.
Really?
And it's kind of annoying.
Yeah.
It does work. It's supposed to be smart, so it's like coupled, so that if you get your exposure or EV, I can't remember what it actually measures in on the camera. I've only used it like for 7 years, but I still don't know this. You have to pull out a lever and then move it, and that adjusts the aperture, and then it adjusts the shutter speed when it's in, but the aperture moves. So you have to set the shutter speed first, then the aperture, which technically is simple. In reality, it's stupid, right? But it does work. You can kind of figure it out and do all that things, but it is one dial. It's just one little lever, nothing more.
That's scary, though, because that's one single point of failure for two key functions, you know? If that thing fails, could it knock out?
I mean, in all honesty, if your camera's shutter fails, then it's...
You're done.
The shutter's failed.
Yeah.
So, like, if both fail, then, yeah, I'd say it's kind of similar. I guess the difference would be if you had a lens with a crummy aperture ring or an aperture that just doesn't want to play ball, then I guess you can change the lens.
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me. I just know that you can get the thing serviced still, and that makes me happy because at least there's some backup. I did have a trip where literally on the last day, the focus knob disconnected, which was really funny.
Yeah.
We've been places with that.
You were, let's go back to Nikon, Nikon.
Yes.
Man. I was being obtuse in one of my videos, and like, I apologize in advance for saying Nikon, and I was like, I apologize to my European friends and for saying that. And then, of course, in the comments, they were like, "How hard is it to say it right? Why can't Americans say Nikon? It's easy to say." And we talked about this in the pre-show, and here's why I say Nikon. So I was a child in the 80s and a teen in the 90s, and I started cutting these segments I was going to put this video together on YouTube, but it was just, I don't know, everybody wants to be upset now. So I was like, just don't fan the flames. But I had pasted together a bunch of commercials from the 80s and 90s from Nikon North America. Every single commercial that you Google, go to YouTube right now, any of you listening to the show, and do Nikon America commercials. They say Nikon, the company says Nikon in all of their advertisements. If Nikon would have said in the 80s and 90s, Nikon, I 1,000% guarantee to every one of you that I'd be saying Nikon right now. But their marketing to Americans said Nikon. The president of Nikon North America in interviews, he says Nikon. So the reason Americans say Nikon is because Nikon said Nikon to Americans. It's not because we're being assholes or we're being Americans. It's because the fucking company that makes the camera said that. You know, I don't understand. Everybody wants to be pissed off today. They don't understand that there's regional dialects and people use different words in different countries. And it's even worse when the company says it wrong according to the rest of the world in America. So they probably did it to make us look like assholes. I don't know. But my entire childhood is full of Nikon from Nikon.
Well, I think anyone from the United Kingdom will agree that you are completely and utterly wrong. It is Nikon. Always will be. But who gives a shit?
Right. Like,
do you know what it means? Yes. Does it sound funny? Maybe. Yeah. But we're there. We're with it. They said it a bit weird. It's cool. We weren't there because we don't live in the same country.
Yeah, Nikon sounds way sexier and way cooler. And I wish I'd have been raised saying Nikon because it just sounds proper. But unfortunately, you know, we were raised on Nikon. And same with Bokeh. Like, that's all you hear in America.
That word.
And then, yeah, it's tough. And not, but like, yeah, I can see how that would be a weird pronunciation. But bokeh, like, no one ever said that growing up. Only with the opening up of information and communication internationally did we hear it pronounced differently. Of course, some asshole in L.A. or New York is going to be like, no, I only heard bokeh my entire life. Sure you did, pal. Sure you did.
We can thank Petapixel for all of that goodness and arguing, and I want to forget that website exists. I'm not a fan.
Like Michael Bartosik says, suck a pixel is what he calls it.
he's not wrong.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
Not to go on too much of a tangent on that, but wow, what a bunch of hot garbage. Well, at least 90% of it.
Yeah.
It's like, how's this bokeh look? It's like, yes. Yeah. No, how does it look? Yes. Can we move on? Yes. All right.
Good. So how do you say it? Do you say bokeh?
I don't.
Yeah. I think that's
dizzy
very
artifacts in the background. Ooh, swell. Ooh, it's a Heliar lens because they're cheap and everybody has them and they're so not original. Don't get me wrong. Right. They're fun. They're cool.
Yeah.
But they're boring. Oh God, they're dull.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, look, it goes to F2. It cost me £5 from a car boot sale. Yes. Same. This is now a less interesting topic. I'm really sorry to say, like, your pictures are out of focus. Yes, the swirl looks cool, but they're out of focus. Sorry.
Yeah, unless you put the subject dead center, they are going to be in a swirly mess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying this, and when I was 16, I totally did the same thing. I think I did a test roll on a really, really crappy, I think it was a busted Zenit B. I am staggered it got through one roll. Because let me tell you, after the first roll, I was done. I won one roll of Poundland film taken to a very, very cheap lab in Norwich. And honestly, the pictures look quite nice. But after that, it turned to crap. And somehow at F2, I managed to get the focus. And this is complete luck. Because at this point, I didn't know I needed glasses. And I guarantee you, I couldn't see shit.
Right.
But somehow I was like, yeah, snap it in focus. Yeah, it's about right. Cool. I'm a confident 16-year-old. I know. I tell a lie. I was 18 because we were in a pub. That's right. You can drink at 18 in the UK, Mac. How does it feel?
You could drink at 18 in Louisiana back in 94. Were you even born then?
Yeah. I'm 93, my friend. I was at least a year into this world, give or take.
Well, you were 17 years away from being able to drink in Louisiana then, but then, of course, they changed the laws. And I think you have to be 21 to buy cigarettes here now, too.
Yeah, it's like there was an amazingly dumb law in the UK where you could smoke cigarettes if you're 16, but you can't purchase them till you're 18.
What?
Yes, yeah, really. I remember that. See, at school.
So what we've established is things are different in different countries. See?
Exactly. Exactly. Right. Things are
this Nikon different. Thing was just tearing me up, man. Oh, it was bothering me so much. And I know I shouldn't let it bother me, but it really did.
Are there any other manufacturers you can think of that have different pronunciations? Like I can't think anyone's going to say Konica, Minolta, or I don't know, Canon. I can't think of any company. No one's going to screw up Olympus.
Yeah.
Like, it's just pretty cut and dry what it is.
Yeah, Nikon's just the one where people want to fight in the streets, you know? They're like, oh, my God, you said Nikon. Why are you so culturally insensitive or something? I don't know, man. It's just,
I've actually heard that argument. I'm like, that's – okay, we're getting into weird territory with this
right.
thing about you're culturally not respected. It's like, what? I'm lost.
Yeah. Is that company told me to say that every I'm going to make that YouTube video. Fuck it. I'm just going to do it because it needs to be out there. I need to like disarm all of these moral high ground seekers, you know, these virtue signalers and show them that, you know, people say things based on the marketing and the company that makes the camera told us to say it that way. I'm not being obtuse. So are you have any plans to shoot anything here recently? Are you so you picked up your frequency of shooting, which is great.
Yeah.
Is that going to continue?
I think so, yeah. I've been, since I got back, I've been playing with the, I've got a Mamiya 645 I picked up. I think I mentioned that last time. Just got a meter prism on it. I should probably put a grip on it because it's, if anyone's used one before, they're, unless you use it like with a waist level finder with the prism, it feels really weird. Like there is a shutter button if you grip it like a pair of binoculars, like, but gotta admit it is not an intuitive thing to hold, especially when you've got it up to your eye. But I have been enjoying shooting that, just because it's, you know, 16 shots instead of 12 on a roll. I do feel like it's got an 80 millimeter on it, which is way tighter than I remember it being, because right. the format's a little bit like cut down, there's the edges that aren't there. But I'm hoping to do some portrait work once, like things where I'm where I live, they kind of settle down a bit. I think like people generally feel more comfortable being with other people. So that means that opportunity is opening up again. So it'd be good to get back to do some of that stuff. And I've got a 150 mm lens for it, which I should probably try out in addition, because might as well. I have it. It came right. came with the bag. So. I've heard good things. So that's kind of where I'm going with that. I think I'm still trying to work out if the camera actually works. So I need to actually finish that roll, dev it, look at it, and then hopefully go, cool. No yeah, line blanks.
Is yours auto advancing?
No, it's not. It's the older Mamiya 645 with the manual advance. It's not the one with the kind of like molded whatever yeah. shape.
That's the one I have with like the power grip where it auto advances. Yeah.
Honestly, I 100% think they are better. Like anything for ease of shooting, hell yeah. At this right. point, like I'm all about that. And I don't think it adds too much bulk. Like if I had a choice and I don't want to spend money on it because I already have one and that's silly, I'm definitely a fan of the Pentax 645s. Either of them, I think they're way, way nicer. Just
yeah. all in all.
Not for to completely sure. crap on the Mamiya stuff. I still think it's great. But having used the other one when I was assisting a fashion photographer, that was way, way nicer as like just a thing. And the glass, I think was, you whisper it, I think the glass was a little bit better.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Elitist.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to deny it. I mean, I will still attest to this day, my favorite piece of glass is the 105 2.4. For the Pentax 6.7, I just yeah. hate that camera. I cannot get on with it, and it kills me. And yes, I know there's probably somewhere out there someone who does a conversion for like a Mamiya RB7 using that. They put a leaf shot. I don't know. I ain't doing it. No, 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 no way. It's not that much of a grail for me to be chasing it in that way.
Yeah.
And I do miss the results because, oh, man.
It is spectacular, man. I took my Pentax 6.7 with me, and I have the 105 2.4. But, man, it's just such a bitch to shoot. I only shot 3 rolls, and I probably shot 35 rolls on that 15-day trip, and only 3 of them were 120. It's just such a beast to lug around, you know. And but that lens is amazing. It really is.
I can't remember if you said, do you have the wood grip, or is it just...
No, I do have the wood grip. I don't use it, though. I hold it just like an SLR.
Oh, gosh, because, like, I quite like the wood grip just for carrying it from A to B, not actually when you're taking the shot. Like, it was kind of a beefy thing. I remember getting a lot of comments when I was taking it around central London for people being like, holy cow, that's...
A giant camera.
It's pretty badass. And I'm like,
yeah,
it's not, but thank you. I'm just going to drink my coffee and, you know. All as well.
I mean, the transition from the wood grip to the shutter was too crazy for me, so I just took it off, you know?
It definitely bugged me because it was on the left. Even though you look at it and think, well, fucking stupid. It actually makes a lot of sense that it's on the left. Everything is logical, because if you've suddenly got this grip on the right, well, you can't hit the shutter or the film advance, so you're, like, it's daft. But I have heard good things about, I think, those, like, butter grips that Ethan Moses does, and I know other people do similar kind of things. I know a lot of people are happy with it, even just for that extra ridge. That definitely seems to help. I know I know I would have liked something like that had I still had mine and not sold it for £250. Let's pretend that didn't happen. Still glad the owner of it is, she's still using it.
Amazing.
Yeah, no, I see on Instagram every now. I'm like, sweet, good on you, proud of you, even though we don't talk anymore. Proud of you.
I think if I shot it more, I definitely would get that butter grip. Because like I said, I do the pinch grip on it. And the handle on the side was just, it was just weird because, you know, I like to hold the weight of the camera in the palm of my hand and use my fingers and my index finger and my thumb to focus and change the aperture width. And then my right hand is on the shutter. So to go and adjust the aperture, you know, you're out on that wooden handle. It's just too far away from where everything's happening.
You need 3 hands. Is that? Oh,
right.
Oops.
Yeah. So I just took it off and I just shoot it like a giant freaking SLR. But I mean, I have, for my body size, I think my hands are like proportionally large. And so it's not too bad for me. It's just so fucking heavy in my backpack when I'm hiking around.
Yeah, I still make the mistake when I take the RB67 out. I'm like, oh, why did I do that?
Right.
I could have taken the Rolleiflex and I would have been a much, much happier camper, which I guess is why I've been using it some more. But yeah, I'm hoping to get some more 35mm stuff done around the house. We're doing a lot more renovation work because we have some time now again to do that. And I didn't document a lot of the stuff that we did since we moved in a year ago, but what little I did take pictures of, it's been really nice looking back at it, because, you know, it's only gonna, how many times are you gonna rip out a bathroom and replace all the stuff?
Maybe every 20 years. Yeah,
exactly. Like, it's not gonna happen often. So yeah, focusing on stuff like that, I think it's gonna become a new thing, even for things that seem insignificant. Like, we changed our ceiling fans in the house this weekend, which was surprisingly quick, but still, you know, how often are you going to do that? It's kind of, I feel that that's important to document at this point in our life, because I've not really been documenting anything because the last year has been hot garbage. Actually, you know what, that is unfair. The last 6 months of 2020 were hot garbage, and then the last 3 months were a little bit worse, and then 2021, that's been all right.
Yeah. It's getting better.
Everything's coming up, Milhouse. It's going good.
What did what was his name? Qui-Gon say, your focus determines your reality. I think that's totally true. Yeah.
Oh, I forget. I watched that movie. I saw it in the cinema, and I even at age, yeah, I'm dating myself. I must have been like 10 or 9. I thought, this can't be Star Wars. This was not very good. Sorry, anyone fan of Phantom Menace?
That was a great quote, though.
It is. don't get me wrong, that is a banging quote.
It's powerful, yeah.
Powerful.
It's so true, though. So if you focus on pissing on people for saying Nikon, your reality is going to be shit. Mm-hmm. Just bring that thing full circle, Jack. Let's bring it back to that.
Don't do this.
No, dude, what you should do in your bathroom remodel, though, is take like a cheap Nikon SLR body, put a lens cap on it, take the battery out so it doesn't run anything, and just put it in the drywall, put the drywall up. So the next person that tears it down, they'll be like, what the fuck? There's an antique in here. This is like from the Mayans and shit.
I remember seeing there's such a nice picture on the web. It's someone did something similar, not with the camera, but it's just written on the inside drywall. It's like, hi, I'm such and such. We redid our bathroom. What did we do wrong for you to rip it apart?
I saw that. And it's a picture of them. They're like, why don't you like what we did?
It's like, yeah, did you not like what we did? It's so, so wholesome. I loved it. Yeah, maybe we'll do something like that.
Yeah, throw an FG20 in there and some prints, and like in 30 years when someone
redoes. I have got a Pentax ME Super that is well dead. Maybe I can just shove that in the wall, forget about it, and it'll act as insulation. I don't know.
That would be amazing.
It's not doing anything.
Time capsule, Jack. Yeah, there you go. We're seeding the future with film.
Yeah, but also the disappointment, that would be like, oh, cool, a camera. Oh, it's fucked. It doesn't work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, that's just trash for me to throw away.
yeah, exactly.
But dude, it has been amazing to catch up again.
No, for real, it's been really good to talk. I'm hoping that we can get a good schedule going again now that things are kind of settled. Both of us are starting new jobs in September. Whoop whoop. That's kind of a big deal. And yeah. I think it's going to be an exciting, sorry to business it, it's going to be an exciting fourth quarter of the year.
There you go. Q4 is going to be banging, Jack.
Yeah, Q4 is going to be keeping it real on the Mac and Jack podcast.
That's right.
And this Q3 nonsense of, are we even working? No.
Right, yeah. We're moving on up, Jack.
Moving on up. Isn't that what Primal Scream said? Definitely.
I think that was Lois and Wheezy from the Jeffersons.
Probably.
You were born in 93, Jack. I don't expect you to know that.
Nope.
Yeah, so I'm heading to Kalamazoo, Michigan. At the time of recording, it is August 30th, so Labor Day weekend's coming up. Mm-hmm. My wife's family's up there, and we ride through Chillicothe, Ohio.
Matt Day.
Yeah. I'm going to just honk the horn and stick my head out the window and be like, Matt Day, as I ride through. Yeah. Because we're going to.
I heard you can get pretty good coffee in Chillicothe. That is not me trying to do alliteration. I actually meant that seriously. They've got a decent coffee spot.
I'm going to check it out because we're staying the night because we're going to drive halfway and Chillicothe just happens to be halfway. So we'll drive up Thursday night, grab a hotel, get up super early, finish the drive, and go to Kalamazoo. What a name, dude. And then we're going to visit family in Pawpaw, Michigan. P-A-W-P-A-W, Michigan.
So yeah, I've only ever heard that in the Jungle Book.
Yeah, Pawpaw. So there you go.
Pawpaw, a prickly pear.
So next episode, we can talk about Chillicothe, Matt Day, and a little Kalamazoo and Pawpaw.
Now, just because you mentioned it, how do you reckon some British people would pronounce the state that you're going to at the end? Not Ohio, the one beginning with M.
Hmm.
An alternative pronunciation, which I'm still impressed at.
Michigan?
No, Michigan.
Oh, I would never have guessed that.
I have no idea where the T comes from, but I guess there's a lot of T in the UK. That is a terrible joke. Jeez, I'm so British. Sorry.
British.
In it, mate. Yeah, not me.
It's Tuesday, isn't it?
No. Yeah. Wallace from Wallace and Gromit doesn't have that kind of an accent. It's not. It's cheese, Gromit. Cheese. Everybody knows the moon's made of cheese.
Forgive me, Jack. Please forgive me.
Yeah, Peter Sellers will be coming for you now from the grave. You'll be like, oh. Anyway, wow. We've gone there. Yeah. So Mac, where can people find you?
And YouTube, I've been like really proud of Danny and I putting out videos ever since she's taken over editing. It's made it much easier for me to put out videos. We've been putting out two a week for the past couple of weeks, but one a week since June. So, I mean, that's definitely nuts. Check me out on YouTube, so Mac Shoots Film. And of course, Instagram, Mac Shoots Film. We just did a 10K giveaway. The Darkroom Lab donated two cameras to the giveaway, cameras and lenses and a roll of film and a prepaid mailer and a hat and a bunch of swag. So they were so awesome to do that. Yeah, keep up with me on Instagram and YouTube. That's where I'm at. What about you there, Jack?
Me here, Jack. You can find me. You can find me on Instagram in the same places that I'm always at. I only really use Instagram, so it's either jack.w.allen, or if you like plastic circles which make noises when you put needles on them, you can find me at Jack's Record Store, which is not a physical location, but it's another thing that I do.
It's good. You're keeping the analog going from photography into records, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, and even on a different analog tangent, I picked up a Walkman from the thrift store for $3.50 because I just want to see if I can repair it. I don't really like cassettes, but I just thought it would be fun.
I like your style, Jack. I like your style.
It even came with a free Cool and the Gang in the Heart.
Hell yeah, man. That is
D-Light Records. I've never heard this one, and I quite frankly don't really want to. So I'm sorry for anyone who likes Cool and the Gang. It is not for me.
Well, Jack, it's been good. Guys, follow us on Instagram, right? We have an Instagram feed as well.
Oh, yeah, you know, I've just realized this as well. We've never mentioned it.
We never mention our Instagram,
Jack. It is Mac and Jack Podcast. Yes. Easy as that. No spaces, no dots, no nothing. Mac and Jack Podcast.
There you go. We plugged it finally. Let's do that at least. Let's do that at least once a year, Jack. Shoot.
Isn't this like episode 9? We've not mentioned it once. Oh, gosh. Right, cool.
We'll be better.
Well, make sure to keep taking pictures because that's kind of what we do. And we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Bye.